This is Unsocial Spectators with Clay Harrison and Mark Ramsey.
And you can find us at unsocialspectators.com and also at unspectators on Twitter. And welcome to episode 68 of Unsocial Spectators. One away from 69.
We have to survive to at least do episode 69.
Yeah, yeah. Health issues tried to take me out.
Yeah, you got the COVID.
Yeah, so I had surgery to get rid of a toe. Mm-hmm. And then trying to heal, it didn't heal properly. So now I have to go back and get surgery again to have stitches put back in. And then I had to get that delayed because then I came down with COVID.
Yeah, see, I almost, it makes me feel like it intensifies the pain, because when I had COVID, it was just like I would have chills real bad. My body physically just was reacting poorly. It was just, it was horrible.
Yeah, I had chills at first, but then I didn't have them anymore. And then I had body aches.
Oh, yeah.
Those were bad. And then after, like, the arm aches, it started being lung and chest aches.
Oh, fuck.
And made it difficult to breathe. And I thought I was going to have to go to the emergency room for that. But I settled down, and then the last few days, it's getting easier and easier, and today it's no more lung aches.
No, that's good. Yeah. That's real good. Yeah, and so I was in the hospital, and they took out a knuckle's worth of my kidney that had cancer, and I had to stay an extra day because I wasn't healing real well the first day. I was just so sick. Uh-huh. It was terrible. It was terrible. I hate surgery, but like this was supposed to be like, well, we're going to have a robot go in. And so they'll be less, you know, less intrusive. But right. I have a scar from when I was younger and had surgery. And now I have 5 scars around it where the robot went in. So you had like four parts of robot, and then they had one incision where they cut where my other incision was just above it to pull the cancer out.
Wow, man.
So my front, I was telling the guys on the podcast, my front's scarred up like Batman's back. That's about as close as to Batman I'll get.
Yeah, we need to rename the show Triage.
UT Southwestern was great. You know, I can't complain because they took care of me and everything, and I had some great staff there and stuff, because I'm a shitty patient, and apparently, like, whenever I'm under anesthesia, it takes a lot for me to come out of it. Like, uh-huh. I don't remember everything that happens. And Shelby goes, you were fighting about the catheter. You just said you weren't going to use the catheter, but the catheter was there and you were using the catheter while you were yelling, I'm not going to use the catheter.
you were freaking out because of all those catheter commercials.
Yeah, they now they relate to me, but I don't have to have one at home, thank God. Jesus. Yeah.
Luckily. So
from the horror portion of this show to movies.
Yeah, we watched the 1976 film Cannonball.
Wow. This was a turd and a half. Like, it's so bad. Like, first of all, like, when you hear the name and you go, oh, it's a car movie, Oh, and it's also directed by Paul Bartel, who directed Death Race 2000. You think this is, at least it's got some cred. It is a total shit fest. This is a race with a group of people, but the title of the movie is obviously the guy who's going to win.
Sure.
And it's David Carradine's in it, Robert Carradine's in it, and I mean, there's some other people who were famous at the time, but this is this is like Cannonball Run with no charisma. And
it was Cannonball Run before Cannonball Run, you know?
Yeah, because I mean, the basis of the movie is they're crossing, you know, they're driving across country and doing the gumball rally, you know?
Yeah.
And it has all these different characters in them, but none of them are entertaining.
Nope.
None of them are funny, and they're trying to be. And then out of fucking nowhere at the end, they have this bloody crash.
That was the best part of the whole movie.
It's so weird. It's like if Burt Reynolds in Cannonball Run suddenly got in a wreck and you had to watch Dom DeLuise die.
Yeah, and I mean, the first 15 minutes of the movie, there's this German in the super sports car, like a Pantera, I think.
Yeah.
And he's beating everybody, and then it blows up because he's going too fast because someone put a bomb on it. And it's just weird, man.
It is, yeah. I mean, every choice is weird, but it's like, you know, Paul Bartel is mainly known for being like he wrote Eating Raoul. He's been teamed up with the driver of the van in the movie, Barry. I can't remember her last name.
Yeah. She was in Eating Raoul, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And they did a chopping mall together. Yeah. They brought their characters back and stuff. He appears in the movie as like he's like the guy playing the piano a couple times.
Yeah, a mafia guy, I think.
Yeah, it's just real weird. But I read that he did the movie because he just needed some quick cash. And it's so funny. He's like, he does this movie just and he goes, I have no interest in cars, yet he has like two car films on his resume.
Yeah, real weird.
And David Carradine, man, just
not
bland as fuck.
Totally, he slept through the whole thing.
Yeah, like when you watch Kill Bill and he gives the Superman speech, like to me that's like one of his best scenes because he's really like that whole end part with Beatrix is just animated and interesting and he's engaging.
Yeah.
In this film, he just had, like, he has no chemistry with the woman that is riding with him. Then he sends to be into another car who is like this comic relief guy. And he's the guy who gets shot in the head. Like, it's a bullet to the fucking forehead. And then there's blood, and it's weird. Like, it just doesn't fit.
Yeah, and the weird thing about that crash scene is you could see that there's cars stacked up and on fire. There's not. There's plenty of room to break.
Yeah, and also Robert Carradine picks up Veronica Hamill, puts her in the car, and there are like two other cars, one's on fire, and they're like, and she goes, should we help them? No, I got to get her to the hospital.
Right.
Like they totally ignore these people before the pileup even happens.
Yeah.
But he is also then rewarded after taking her to the hospital by winning the Cannonball Run, because when Cannonball gets there, he realizes there are shenanigans about.
Yeah, that his brother is trying to fix everything.
Yes, and his brother is played by the great Big Dick Miller. I love him. He is great. And he is a Roger Corman. He's a staple. He's in his films. And this was another one. He fits in perfect with it. I just love that guy.
Yeah, but it was kind of one of those movies you're just like, huh.
Yeah, because there's a lot of.
Nobody's trying.
Yeah, there's it's just real weird to watch these scenes be filmed with just zero effort. I think there's like the one interesting kind of guy is the guy who is going to take the Cadillac from LA to New York, and he keeps trying to hit on the women in the van,
Right.
and the van keeps driving him off the road, you know. And then, of course, you know, he delivers this busted up Cadillac at the end. I think that's the only guy who brings some energy to the film,
Yeah,
because
that's it.
he's supposed to show that he's interested in these women, and the women are all just like weird because they go from being like angry and put off by him to hooking up with these cops to get out of a ticket. Just.
Yeah, man, and then the guy puts gasoline cans in the back of a towed cop car and blows it up. I mean,
Yeah.
just weird shit.
I know, and it's so weird because they're just, like during the 70s there were just so many weird car movies and stuff that it was just like you just had to have cars pile up, car chases, wrecks, and not really much of a script. I
Right.
mean, like Cannonball Run's obviously that that but to see this such low effort. Like, obviously, they did put some work into Cannonball Run, but they also had people who had charisma.
Sure. Yeah, man, that was kind of a hard to watch film,
Yeah,
but
it was.
yeah, I got through it. So what else have you been watching?
I got to see Fast X. A friend of mine got a copy on his Plex server, and so I got to watch it, and I've had a blast. It is, to sell it to anyone who doesn't get the Fast and Furious, Jason Momoa is playing the son of one of the villains that is killed in one of the previous movies. And so he's out to seek revenge against the family. But Jason Momoa is playing it like Frank Gorshin's The Riddler, if he was a villain in the Fast and Furious.
Wow.
Because he is over the top and insane, and he like narrates himself, and it's just, I kind of love it. It was like my favorite part of it because you could tell there was a lot of stuff that was just cut out and useless, but they still had great car chases, great car stunts. John Cena's character does a 180 and becomes this fun uncle who is supposed to be protecting Dom's son throughout the movie. So, but in doing so, they have like great adventures and have like, yeah, it is 3 hours of just car shit.
Yeah.
But
Really? For a Fast and Furious movies with cars?
it's one of three. That's the one thing that was weird was when this came out, is it was supposed to be a two-part finale. Like, this was the beginning, and this ends on such a cliffhanger going into the next two films. So there's going to be two more films to help wrap this film up, that none of it makes sense. None of it at all, because they brought a character back from the dead in this one too. So again, at the end, you're like, what the fuck is going on? What is happening?
Didn't they go to space already?
In the last one, they went to space
You
because they had to
see.
get close to a satellite. So they dispatched Ludacris and Tyrese and no, it's not Tyrese. Who the hell is who plays Roman? I can't
Don't
remember the guy's
ask
name.
me.
But it's just insane. Like, really, the only but thing that I hate about it now is Charlize Theron's character is really terrible. Like, she plays kind of this like villain that really just narrates
She's
what, you know, I know what you're thinking, Dom. Does your family, you know, like she'll talk for other characters, and
cashing a check.
she
I mean,
is.
come on.
Yeah. But the fun cameo in it is that Pete Davidson is in Fast X.
Oh, okay.
And I
Does he
also
go to space?
no, he is running some nostalgic hacker store that had like early Windows machines and stuff, but it was also a way for Ramsey to connect with somebody who is connected to the underground so they can get more cars and shit.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
of course. And it, the scene doesn't need to take place at all. Like, you could actually take that piece and throw it away.
Well, he's a Transformer now too.
Yeah, no shit. This dude's in franchise after franchise. I'm waiting for him to be in the next season of Mandalorian.
Oh, yeah.
He'll just show up and just be like that character Chad he does on SNL. He's like, hey. Uh-huh. Okay. But I watched Bupkis too, which is Pete Davidson's show.
Yeah, I thought that was really good.
Yeah, he does a Fast and Furious episode that I fucking laughed at. It was my favorite thing. There's two episodes. The second episode that is about him as a kid, him and his uncle's relationship, that I think is Emmy worthy. I thought that was a fantastic episode. And then the fourth episode where he's going to go be in a Fast and Furious film, but they're not really sure, so they're going to have him drive down and entertain Vin Diesel's daughter on a yacht. So it becomes a Fast and Furious film because they're all driving down together. And the dude that plays Crispy is my favorite thing in that episode.
Yeah.
The drug dealing weird guy with a pawn store that is a gas station that sells diamonds.
Right. Just a weird concept. It reminds me a lot of Atlanta.
Oh, really? Yeah, see, I only watched the first couple of episodes of Atlanta, and I never finished the first season.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, you know, how some episodes just go out there, you know, has nothing to do with anything. But I think Ray Romano in that show
is
pretty damn good.
That is so wild, just having that Ray Romano in his dreams, but also in his reality.
Yeah.
But then hinting that he may be in both and know it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Pretty fucking weird, man. But yeah, I thought that was a pretty good show.
Yeah. I watched Across the Spider-Verse, but it was such a bad copy that it didn't do it justice, so I don't think I can really comment about it because I feel like that one I need to. Actually, it looked so great. It looked like a big screen one. Like, I should probably go to the theater for that.
Yeah, yeah. It's doing good.
I rewatched Heat on Netflix. Just so fucking good. Like, I forget how good that is.
One of the best movies ever made.
Yeah. I still kind of question those, like the Natalie Portman character. She's only in it so much to be this bad kid, but then it just goes super dark at the end when he finds her in the tub. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, like, I guess you're supposed to just not know and just have it come in out of left field and hit it like it hits him.
Yeah.
I watched, I finally got Apple to work. So I watched a lot of Apple stuff for the first time. The Big Con. Have you seen this documentary?
No.
Okay, so there's this lawyer in Kentucky who was taking disability cases and working with a judge there to basically just ship them through the system. And he's basically what has broken the disability system.
Wow.
And so it's like a 4-episode documentary about this guy. And he, you know, you go... He claims like this whole thing, the whole system was broken and he was just helping people, you know, but he was collecting tons of checks. But this guy kind of thought he was like a Kentucky James Bond kind of guy. He would go on sex tours and he may have been married like 15 or 16 times. He would go. Yeah. When he went into hiding, he had, he hooked up with a woman there. Like, there are just so many women for this guy who was just a small town disability attorney. And they ran the office almost like a cult, like people really didn't have downtime to chit chat or anything. Sure. And his mom had cameras in the office to watch everyone. But then as they tell as the story unfolds, you find these two women who worked at the court office who were like calling this guy out for his bullshit. And basically kind of held the documentation and got everything together to shut it down. But people obviously were getting paid. And so they were threatened. Their lives were threatened. But they were like, look, this system isn't just 100% for y'all. It's for everyone. But you got to go through it right.
Right.
And so he eventually gets caught. It just takes years and years to get it to where it was. And me going through the disability system, it makes me even angrier at this fucking guy, because he's one of the people that broke it.
Right.
And that's why it's like, it takes a year to process something. So anyhow, like at the end, he's put under house arrest, and this guy who's traveled the world, he learned to speak Spanish just so he could pick up women.
Hey,
it's a wild ass story. I don't even think I'm doing it justice, other than he really fucking broke disability, but he's a fucking crazy guy, so this story is really wild to kind of go through. But it was a pretty great documentary. I mean it's what I'd recommend.
What was it called?
The Big Con.
Big Con.
Conn, because his name was like Mark Conn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I watched High Tension.
Okay. So let's see. What did you think of the twist? Because I know that's like
pretty fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Didn't see it coming, but it would be tough to see it coming.
Exactly. People shit on that movie because of the twist, and I go, I never saw it coming. So yeah. I'm glad you didn't see it either, because otherwise I would have been like, well, maybe I wasn't paying attention.
No, I didn't see it coming. Then I watched, this was weird, I watched a movie, Flashpoint, with Treat Williams and what's his name? Chris Christopherson.
Yes.
About these Texas border guards. It was so weird. I watched it in the afternoon, and later that day, Treat Williams dies.
Oh, I forgot he died during
the day I watched it.
The day he watched it, yeah.
And I was kind of freaking out, like, I didn't do it. You know what I mean?
Did you watch Little Miss Sunshine recently?
No.
Okay.
No. But I kind of hate the fact that, I mean, he won the Oscar for Little Miss Sunshine, but all the articles, Little Miss Sunshine, Edward Scissorhands, and you're like, the in-laws, stupid.
I know, and I was talking to the guys on my other podcast about that, because I was like, The In-Laws is such a fucking underrated movie. Like, it got remade, and I don't think you could remake that movie without those two, because they were magic together. It's him and Peter Falk, right?
Yeah.
Arkin and Falk, yeah. That was on cable when I was a kid, and I just laughed my ass off at that.
Time to serpentine. Yeah, man, that was a shame, but it was really weird. Flashpoint's a pretty good film.
Yeah, it's on HBO Max, so I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, worth watching. And then I watched The Host.
Oh, is this the Korean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
Pretty good monster movie. You know?
It's not traditional type monster movie either.
No, pretty cool family dynamics. I mean, the CG is not the greatest, but it's fun, And Flashpoint had the Tangerine Dream soundtrack.
Oh, that's
so good. You know, back then in the 80s, early 80s, they were doing a ton of soundtracks, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that was the music, that was the vibe.
So I started watching The Sopranos.
Oh wow, how deep are you in?
Season two, somewhere in season two. So
it's so good.
Yeah, I never seen it before. So
good, man. Like it's one I don't know if I could revisit because I just.
Well, you know what happens.
Yeah, it's nothing like the first time.
I don't rewatch. I rarely rewatch movies. You know, I mean, I watch Jaws every year and stuff like that, but. You know, stuff that I rarely rewatch, but sometimes.
No, I rewatch a lot. And what was funny is, like, when I was going through the movies that I was watching, I started watching this movie. I realized I had already rewatched, or this I had already seen. And I was just like, what the fuck? Like, am I just, like,
and
too much time at home?
I finished The Last of Us.
Oh, what'd you think?
Yeah, it was a real good show.
Yeah, I really enjoyed those two.
Then I watched the Sarah Silverman concert show on HBO.
How was that?
It was okay, not her best.
Yeah.
I mean...
Jesus is Magic is probably her best.
Totally. Her new stuff, she's not as edgy as she used to be, but she can't be edgy anymore because nobody can be edgy anymore, I guess.
No.
But, yeah, it was all right. I watched Judas and the Black Messiah.
How was that?
Really good, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good.
It just seems too heavy. Like, you got to be in a certain mood to watch that.
I don't think so. I don't think it's too heavy. Really worth checking out. Then I watched Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
So fucking good. I have watched that again in the past year. So, and again, Chris Christopherson, right?
Chris Christopherson. Just a really good film. Martin Scorsese's underrated film, probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a story of that time period. It's so good and well filmed, and I don't know. There's just like first. It makes me think about, like, the state of movies today. Like, I don't think we'll get a movie like that anymore.
No, not in theater.
Not in theaters. I don't know where it would end up, but it's like that bums me out when you think about, like, a great movie like that you won't ever see that in a wide
You
release.
May see... No, it won't be... It'll be art film. You know? Then I finished watching Hannibal. Fuck.
How many seasons?
Four.
Wow.
Dude, it's totally worth seeing. It's on my top 10 TV shows of all time.
Wow.
It's really, really good. I mean, holy shit.
I might have to put that on. I might have to try that one out.
Then I started watching or finished watching Watchmen. I enjoyed that.
Oh, so good. Like, I just can't believe Damon Lindelof pulled that off, because that was unbelievably good.
Yeah, it was really, really good. I had a good time with that. And then I started watching, I finished the first season of The Righteous Gemstones.
Yeah, I think I finished the first season, but it never got me motivated to see the second season.
I'm watching the second season right now. It's really good, man.
Yeah, so you've made me rethink about just starting over again and redo that one.
It's some funny shit. Just enjoying that. I call it white trash succession. Yeah, and then I watched a movie called How to Plan an Orgy in a Small Town.
Oh, I remember this movie.
Dude, this... I'm surprised I've never heard of it. It's really, really good.
Yeah, who wrote this? For some reason...
I'm not sure, but...
Jeremy... LaLonde, I don't know who that is.
It has, what's her name? Jewel State?
Jewel State from Firefly.
That was why I saw it, because of her. But all the other characters make it worth it.
Okay, because, I'm looking through them and I don't recognize any of the names.
It's pretty good raunchy comedy. You know, where you don't have that anymore, you know? And it's not dumb.
Oh, good.
You know what I mean? It's actually intelligent comedy.
Yeah, it looks like this guy is a Canadian comedian who worked and wrote a lot of sketch stuff. He worked on it as an editor on Baron Von Sketch Show.
Yeah,
Canadian TV.
Definitely worth checking out. It was free somewhere. I don't know. I think Tubi, I'm sure.
Probably, yeah.
Then I'll watch The Deep. Yep.
The what?
The Deep.
Oh, God. From what year was that? 78?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I hadn't seen it in ever, you know.
I hadn't seen it since I was a kid. I feel like that one got heavy rotation on HBO back in the day.
Yeah, I'm sure it did, but it was okay. You know, worth watching if you've never seen it.
Yeah.
Then I watched Station 11.
Loved Station 11 so much.
Dude, that was awesome.
It is from a new genre that I've discovered called hope punk. Huh. Which is kind of a post-cyberpunk, literary genre of people who are in some sort of, post-apocalyptic type scenario, but it's more stories of survival and hope.
Right.
Because I read the book after watching that, and the book is so different.
Right.
So different. Like, in fact, I was disappointed in the book because the show was so much better.
Yeah, I thought the show was really, really good, man.
Yeah, just that bit of kindness and how much that mattered, you know. Oh, God, I really loved that. That was so good.
And then I finished True Detective Season 3.
Okay, that's what I haven't seen, so...
Dude, it's great.
Okay.
Dude, it's really, really good.
Because it has Marshall Ali in it.
Yeah, it's really worth checking out if you haven't seen it.
Okay.
And they're going to have a season 4 with Jodie Foster.
Yeah, that's wild casting. I that does make me curious to watch.
It's going to be in Alaska, I think.
Yeah, I did see the preview for that.
Yeah, so definitely check out season 3 of that if you haven't. Then I watched The Pawnbroker.
I think I remember this.
Man, it's in my top 10 movies.
Oh, 1964?
Rod Steiger should have... He won an Oscar for In the Heat of the Night. He was nominated for this. He should have won it for this, too. He is so fucking good in it. And what's crazy is there's a scene with the uncredited Morgan Freeman as street punk.
Yeah, it says, when I pulled this up, Morgan Freeman, man on the street.
Yeah, that totally crazy, but Steiger's performance is, I mean, come on. nobody does it that good.
Yeah.
You know, just fantastic.
So other Apple stuff that I checked out was like the Chris Evans Ana de Armas Ghosted movie, where you're supposed to believe he's like this single dude who works on a farm, and he meets this chick, and you know, they have madcap adventures. You know, it's weird watching movies that just seem like, you know, I don't think people will revisit a movie like this. This is just kind of a throwaway. I don't think it's like, I don't know, it's like entertaining once, but not great.
I had an Apple for a week, and I watched Coda, the Tom Hanks movie Greyhound.
Oh, I watched Finch.
And then I watched all the Beatles.
Oh, the
Beatles documentary. And then that was all I needed.
Yeah, see, I watched Finch, the Tom Hanks survival one.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like it's Castaway without really
a good plot.
Yeah, I mean, you're still watching Tom Hanks. You're still like, there are elements of it that are like the same things you get from Castaway, because essentially the guy is sick. He builds a robot to take care of his dog. I get so frustrated watching it because so much of the robot's memory is its personality, which is really weird that it's like you're going to use that. Like, basically, you could teach it to do what you need it to do without all this personality bullshit. So it's like if Wilson could talk kind of thing,
right,
from Castaway. But really, it's playing off the sentimentality of when you get old and you can't take care of your pets, you know, like, and I can kind of relate on some level to that. So it's just kind of a bummer to watch, you know,
right,
with some special effects. And that's the bottom line. I was just like, you know.
Yeah, it didn't sound like a lot of people liked it, but.
Yeah, Joe Bob did a premiere of Dead City, the Walking Dead spinoff, which you have to buy into a lot of bullshit that's in the story to see the two main characters team up in this show. But they're great actors. What the fuck's her last name? Shit. And Jeffrey Dean Morgan. I hate that I can't think of her name right off. But you know, she her husband Glenn in the show is beat to death by her co-star, and you're supposed to, yeah, and it's such a pivotal part of the show that most people quit watching the show after that happened.
Right.
But Dead City was exciting, and I kind of like enjoyed it because they're in New York, and they have to navigate all the shit that's there, and it's worse because they're on Manhattan Island. And so bodies will just like drop out of the sky and shit. They have to explain like all these different zombies have rats inside of it. I dug it. You know, I kind of just blew off the shit about the story and then just enjoyed the show.
Oh, that's cool. So I watched The Lobster.
Oh, I haven't watched that yet. Yeah, pretty, with Colin Farrell.
Pretty fucking fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a fairy tale, you know, of sorts, but
I forget who wrote that.
It had some good ideas. I think it was, Yorgos?
Yeah, it's directed by Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yeah, I wasn't going to try to pronounce his last name. But yeah, definitely worth checking out, man.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd check it out.
I got one for you to check out on from Australia called The Stranger. It's on Netflix, but let me see. It's got to be available other places too. But The Stranger is this Australian film. I want you to go in blind because the story unravels, and I feel like if you go in knowing any part of it, you may I went in kind of blind. I was just Joel Edgerton. That's who it is. Joel Edgerton's in it, and I really dig him. So I went in.
Joel Edgerton's in it? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He played Uncle Owen, but he's done a lot of other fucking movies. That's the one I always remember. It's like, oh, yeah, he played Uncle Owen in the prequels.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll check out The Stranger if I can find it. And then I watched Taboo on Peacock. Dude, Tom Hardy. Oh, the
series. I forgot about that.
It's got Tom Hardy in it.
Yeah.
Dude, it's good.
I don't know why I haven't watched it.
It's just one
season.
A season, yeah. It's really, really good. Definitely worth it, man.
Okay.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I mean, Tom Hardy is so good. I mean, you know, he's good in everything.
He's good in everything. Like, when's he bad? Like, I forget that that guy plays Venom. And it's like, we're getting a great actor playing Venom.
I mean, Bronson is so good. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing.
Bane was so iconic in the sense that it just kind of like everyone had a Bane impression. Yeah. You know, it became part of like the zeitgeist. It was weird.
Yeah, I mean he's good, but yeah, check out. I won't spoil Taboo. Just go in and watch it.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll definitely love it. Then I watched Jeremiah Johnson.
Robert Redford?
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's what year is that? 60 or 70? Jeremiah Johnson.
73, maybe?
73? Okay. Yeah, that one I wasn't sure of the year at all.
Yeah, it's basically... he's a... What was that show they had? Grizzly Adams.
Grizzly Adams.
Yeah, it's Grizzly Adams. That's basically it. But it's, you know, it's fun. I hadn't seen it, so I wanted to check it on my list.
Oh, holy shit. Do you watch the documentary now?
No.
It's a bunch of SNL guys who do parodies of documentaries. And I just started season three, and they do a parody of, oh my God, Thin Blue Line, the director, fucking shit. I hate that my brain's flaking out like this.
Long COVID.
Yeah.
Brain fog. Like,
I'm having a total... the fuck?
Okay.
I'm sorry. I tried to look it up. Anyhow, Werner Herzog. That's who it is. Oh,
okay.
Okay, yeah, you know the documentary Werner Herzog and working on... I think it's Aguirre,
Wrath of God, yeah.
They parody that documentary in two parts, but instead of him making this great movie, it's a guy who's, you know, mimicking that director to make an 80s sitcom called The Nanny Bachelor. It's the dumbest premise. And it's so fucking absurd, and I love it. I think John Mulaney wrote it, and it's a two-parter on Documentary Now. But they do parodies of, like, Grey Gardens and The Fog of War and stuff. So if you ever, like, if you dig those kinds of, like, parodies. But the Werner Herzog parody is fucking on point and is the greatest episode of that entire series.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun. Yeah, I might check that out. Where do you find that?
Documentary now seems to be streaming Netflix. It's on the Roku channel for free, AMC for free.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Then
I've seen it on Pluto too.
I rewatched The Exorcist because you have to every now and then.
It's not just for Halloween.
No. Then I started watching Based on a True Story on Peacock. It's a show about this couple. So there's a serial killer, and this couple is turns out they find out their plumber, who has become the friend of the guy, is a serial killer.
Okay.
So they confront him and tell him that they'll won't turn him in if he does their podcast about true crime. It's the weirdest fucking show, man.
But it's worth it?
So far, I mean, I've watched like 4 episodes, and now I'm at the episode where they're like at a podcast convention of true crime podcasts, and he decides to tag along. I mean, it's just
batshit.
Total, and the whole time you're like, I can't believe this is a TV show. You know what I mean? But yeah, it's pretty fucking crazy. And yeah. It's got what's her name from
Kaylee Cuoco.
Yeah, Cuoco. And she's pregnant through the whole thing. So it's pretty fucking weird.
Yeah, Chris Messina. I know him from he was in Birds of Prey, played Zaz.
Yeah.
He was good.
Yeah, he's good at it.
Yeah, Natalia Dyer from Stranger Things.
Yeah, it's a pretty good fucking show. Definitely worth watching. Then I started watching The White Lotus. I finished the first season.
I dug The White Lotus.
Definitely how things are. Mm-hmm. Definitely how things are. Enjoying it. Then I watched Last Days on Mars. Have you seen this?
No.
It's okay. They go to Mars. They find this bacteria. They're proving life exists. And then the bacteria infects them and turns them into zombies. And it goes crazy.
Space zombies?
Yeah, space zombies on Mars.
It's, wow. 18% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I'm surprised it got that good.
Holy fuck. The budget was $10 million. The box office, $187,000.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe a little disappointing. Then I went on a Jason Bourne binge.
Oh, really?
Bourne Identity, Bourne Supremacy, Bourne Ultimatum.
I feel like that one is every other one is good, like the first and third. But I couldn't tell you the plot of each one.
They all kind of melt together. Yeah. You know, it was okay, but I mean, I'm not like, oh man, I love the Bourne movies. Then I rewatched Terminator 2. Hadn't seen it for years. Still perfect.
Yeah, they should have never made a sequel to that. It should have just stopped right there.
Then I watched Evil Dead Rise.
I've seen part of that. I think I was watching, I don't know how I remember seeing this. It looked fucked up, like, in a good way.
It's all right. It's all right. I mean, it's definitely a horror zombie movie, you know. But you know, you compare it to Evil Dead movies, and you're nothing like it. Nothing.
Yeah,
like
that.
It.
Yeah, I hate when they, you know, they're putting it in that Evil Dead universe from the remake, but it's like it has nothing to do with like Bruce Campbell and the real Evil Dead.
Then I rewatched The Witch yesterday.
So good.
God, it's so fucking good. It's so fucking good. Then I finished Parks and Rec Season 6. So,
great show.
I'm finally on the last season.
Such a great show.
You have anything else you've been watching?
Yeah, I watched on Netflix a foreign film that took the zombie genre and just changed it to old people and called the movie Old People. So it was like this family goes to visit their grandmother in a nursing home, but somehow, like, I can't remember if it's demonic possession or some sort of village holiday that they become super strong and start to kill everyone in the town. And it just plays off the trope of fear of old people, you right. know, because it's in an old folks' home. It's shot really well. But it's just kind of like, it's nothing you hadn't seen before, you know?
It's kind of like Romero's The Amusement Park.
Yeah. And again, this is the movie I watched. Here's another movie, The Silence. And I was like, oh, well, this looks kind of interesting. It's got the chick from Sabrina, and it's got the Stanley Tucci in it. And it's about, but it's like a mix of Bird Box and The Quiet Place.
Oh, okay.
And so It's what I hate about it is after you only feel the hate for the movie after you watched it, because I had already seen this once and completely forgot about it, rewatched it, and you get to the end, you go, these people made the worst decision at every step in the film, yet they get to survive and you're supposed to be happy for them at the end, but they're the worst people. Like at the beginning, there are like warnings of like these things coming down and you're not supposed to make noise. And that's how it triggers them, which is the same plot of The Quiet Place. And so they decide to get in their car and go somewhere, but they have no plan to go anywhere.
They're just going.
And then it just kind of like breaks down of like every bad choice results in someone in their family dying. And then it's just like, and then the end, it was just, and then I was just like, I fucking have seen this. And I was mad at myself for for watching
it. You made a bad decision as well.
Oh, yeah. Couple of documentaries. There's one called Merpeople on Netflix.
Yeah, I've heard about this.
It's about these women who swim as mermaids in shows down in Florida. And apparently there was this specific place that did these shows all the way back to the 60s. And so people who had grown up there were kind of in awe of it. So it follows this like community. And I think I love documentaries like this that are about a subculture you would never ever hear about. And that's what this is.
Yeah. It's about mer people.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, people who dig that kind of like showmanship and putting on a show for kids or something. Like, it's not like portraying them in like, oh, what a goofy concept. It's people who go like, this is my thing. This is what I'm into. And I'm going to do everything I can to just either get a job at it or be around people who are also into it and have a good time.
Yeah. I remember going to Aquarena Springs in San Marcos when I was a kid, and they had mer people there underwater. They had glass bottom bolts and mermaids.
Yeah. And they would show how they put on these shows. Then you're watching this one guy who's like so into it that he's putting all his money into like building his own place to have these shows and shit. And I enjoyed it because it wasn't, it was just a weird, not weird, but it was just weird for me see as an outsider looking in.
Right.
But these people just kind of like digging their own life, and their life is about putting on a mermaid tail and swimming.
Huh. whatever you're into, I guess.
And then Netflix has a documentary on the American Gladiators called Muscles and Mayhem. Dude, it don't tell me you didn't watch American Gladiators.
No, I did.
Well, it catches up with everyone, and they spill all the tea about from cocaine, steroids, affairs, season by season. And it's interesting. You get to hear all this cool shit. I mean, I remember that. I mean, it was so hyped. And at one point it said that American Gladiators ratings outdid the NFL.
Yeah, it was crazy, man.
Yeah, and that you know, like all the people who appeared as American Gladiators never received like merchandising money, like what? All the copies of them. Yeah, like
why would they? They had action figures, right?
Yeah, they had action figures. But it's great. I mean, like if you remember that, it's worth revisiting for the nostalgia and finding out all the dirt. I don't think it's as interesting today if someone just said, "Well, this was an old TV show."
Right, right. But you if know, you lived it, it's yeah. a fun doc.
Yeah, it's way more interesting. Have you ever seen Grand Theft Parsons?
No.
It's the Johnny Knoxville movie about he's playing the music manager to Graham Parsons, who died in the 70s, and they had both made this agreement that if one of them died, that they would get the body and take it out for like a Viking funeral type thing. And so this is not a documentary, and it's not even it basically that's the whole idea, and it's told through someone else's, you know, eyes as kind of a comedy. But the payoff is that Michael Shannon is the co-star to Johnny Knoxville, and he fucking is so good.
Well, he's good in everything, man.
He's so fucking great in everything. It makes me sad to watch him have to be General Zod in the Flash movie for like 15 minutes. And
he's pulling a lever.
But Michael Shannon plays the driver of this hippie hearse that they used to tote the body across the country because they were going to light it up at Joshua Tree. It's not a great movie. It's Michael Shannon's great, and it makes you research the history on Graham Parsons, which, you know, leads you to more music. So
sure,
it's pretty good.
Anything else?
Yeah, I got a lot. There's a Stanley documentary on Disney Plus it's great because as a comic book fan, I know that Stanley didn't create every goddamn thing at Marvel.
Yeah, but he said he did.
He does parade around. He has that salesmanship. He has that charisma. The documentary basically takes interviews that he has done for all of his life and help where he would tell stories about his life. And it goes through the whole thing. It's only like 90 minutes. It's perfect amount of time. But it don't just accept that Stan Lee did this stuff. Stan was a spokesperson for Marvel. Stan had to sell for Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
Stan was a storyteller. That was his job.
He was a shameless huckster.
Yeah. You know, and I think if you focus on, you know, some of the people that worked with him that didn't get the accolades he got, Jack Kirby, who did, you know, Fantastic Four, you know, all his work, then you've got Steve Ditko, who did Spider-Man, and who never wanted that because part of his life philosophy was objectivism, and he was very into Ayn Rand and all that, and had even, after he left, because he was very upset with Stan about a lot of stuff, he never felt like the villains that Peter fought, he should know who they are. They should just be random people. Like,
right.
What are the odds, the fact that the Green Goblin is his best friend's dad. Like, he argued that with Stan for a long time. And even Jack Kirby, like, it, they tell you in the documentary, Jack Kirby would draw... The Marvel method for making comics was the writer would say, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have Hawkeye battle this bad guy, and this is going to happen. Then the artist would draw everything. Then the writer would have to come back and fill in the dialogue and tell the story with the art that they had. That was called the Marvel way. And that was with the way Jack Kirby worked. Jack Kirby would just draw a book, even though Stan told him what the story was. Jack didn't give a fuck. He would just draw it the way he felt like he should draw it. And then Stan worked around him. And that was always the, like, more of the creator side wasn't just drawing, but like telling the story on paper. And that Jack Kirby did that more than Stan really gave him credit for.
Right, right.
But like the documentary plays like an interview from a radio show where it makes it sound like they're at odds. I've listened to that interview and they sounded like they were good friends, and they were just like, it was Jack's birthday, and they were just, Stan was calling to say happy birthday, and they were, and that was it, you know. It was interesting enough to see Jack Kirby's family come out with a statement after it, because they were like, look, Stan's full of shit.
Right.
And then they kind of like said, like, remember, you know, who did the hard work, who did the heavy lifting. It was always, you know, Jack. But beyond that, I watched it. You've seen Fantastic Planet, the animated film, the French animated film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did a rewatch of that. That's such a great movie.
Uh-huh.
And it was on Max, and it's a great short animated film for, I think if... I've talked about Ralph Bakshi a lot. I just love some of that early animation film that was just not kid animation.
Sure.
The last two films I've watched are just big fucking action movies that I've gotten to the point I only watch for the action sequences, that I don't care about the story anymore. And that's John Wick 4 and Extraction 2. Because John Wick 4 doesn't really add anything to the mythology or the story at all.
No.
It's just John Wick shooting, and that's it. Yeah. So you just kind of have to pay attention to that. Like, nothing else really matters in that universe.
It's a video game.
That's exactly what it is. And so is Extraction 2. Like, I love, like, a great action story that's going to pull me in, and... But it, like, Extraction 2 outdoes John Wick 4 by a fucking landslide. But you do not give a shit about characters in either film. Like, right. You're just watching, you know, the guy that plays Thor, Chris Hemsworth, just... It's weird. There is this weird overlap in pop culture of like, okay, now we know that these characters were in Marvel movies together. We put them in movies together, because Idris Elba shows up in Extraction 2 as this new guy who gives him like data to go do a job, you know, and it's like they were in Thor together and they were supposed to be, you know, and they were best friends. In Ghosted, they have the Falcon show up to talk to Chris Evans. Sebastian Stan show up to talk to Chris Evans. Like everyone that he kind of engaged with, it was a weird bit that they do in the movie to just have these bounty hunters show up that were from Marvel movies to engage with Chris Evans. And it's literally for like 30 seconds and then they're gone.
Yeah. A little bit of crossover to get pub.
Yeah, I guess, but it's like, it's so useless and pointless to the film, and it's not a great Easter egg. It's just like, oh, it's Captain America and Winter Soldier. Oh, it's Captain and Falcon. Oh, it's Thor and... But yeah, I mean, I enjoy them, but it's like, I hate the fact that we've brought, like, action films to the point of that's all it is and it's no story. The movies are filled with Marvel movies that as a kid I would love. And now I'm kind of like going, you know, we're not going to get those Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore type films.
Yeah, definitely. So I have some news.
All right, news.
Jabba the Hutt will be in Osaka.
What?
Oh,
no Jabba Nabata.
Jabba's going to be in Osaka.
Jabba the Hutt?
Yeah.
Is going to be in Osaka.
Yeah.
Oh, Ahsoka. Okay, that's how I was like going. I was thinking Japan. I was like, no, that's weird.
He's not going to be in Osaka. He's going to be in Osaka. I'm sorry,
No, no worries, man.
Yeah.
Well, shit. So they're going to... Because we saw Hutts show up in Boba Fett. Because after Jabba dies, the Hutt family comes to try to reclaim Tatooine. And Bubba is not playing that.
Yeah, so I thought that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And Linda Hamilton's going to be in Stranger Things.
Fuck yes. That's great. I love that. I'm really looking forward to this next season.
Yeah, and they're going to have a season two of Bupkis.
Good, because it ended on a big cliffhanger.
Yeah. And they're remaking A Last Train to Busan as Last Train to New York.
No.
Yeah.
No. Not needed.
Yeah.
Unnecessary.
I totally agree, but they're going to do it. Next week, we're going to review Jackson County Jail.
This came from Joe Bob's Redneck Movie List.
Yeah, from 1976. Oh,
I have a movie for you. I have one more I forgot about because I'd put it on my recommendations that I want anyone listening to go in blind because it was fucking fantastic. All I saw was it's called The Apology with Anna Gunn, who played Skyler on Breaking Bad, and Janine Garofalo. And I was like, man, I hadn't seen Janine Garofalo in a movie in a while, and this is from last year. So I was like, I just started it. Dude, intense, going blind. It's very uncomfortable, but it's a very intense movie with a very small cast, and I dug it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll check it out.
So, it's my recommendation of the week.
anything else you got?
That's it, man. That's it. I'm still recovering, so I'm going to be watching a lot more, and I got a lot of books from the library, so I got a lot to read, too.
All right, well, I see everybody next week for the show.
69.
Later.
Later.